Jake, do you want to know what the six pillars of success from a former Navy SEAL who we coined the weapon of surgical destruction? You're just going to have to listen on.
Gino, hit us. Biggest aha from the show. Go.
The caveman connection. Authenticity, vulnerability, and trust.
It'll move the needle for your business. Let's go. Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenzian, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, G-Daddy. Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing great, and I got another amazing show for you today. We're going to learn a little bit something about leadership today, my friend. How you doing?
Man, you're just bringing in the beef. I love it. So I'm doing great, always making it happen. Fantastic guest today. Today's guest is a 10-year veteran of the Navy SEALs and creator of the SEAL Success Program, which helps high performers find fulfillment and make a sustainable impact in their field. He's recognized as one of the foremost experts in leadership development, team performance, and project management. So without further ado, Larry Inch, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
Hey, it's always our pleasure. We're Chick-fil-A fans, so that's what we say here. Let's dive in a little bit about your time as a Navy SEAL and how that aided your leadership development specifically.
So I spent 10 years as an officer in the SEAL teams from 1998 to 2008. I was at SEAL Team 3 for about half of that and on the West Coast my whole career. So we were responsible for the Middle East, which meant for quite a busy time to be a SEAL. I would say I've spent more time as an entrepreneur and a business owner than a SEAL now. Like that turned a couple years ago. The biggest benefit of being in the SEALs was actually having the opportunity to be in an environment where leadership, team, coordination of action was done really, really well. Since I went straight from high school to the Naval Academy into the SEALs, when I got into business, I was kind of like you'd say ruined of having just high performers around me all the time. And then as soon as I started building my own team, I just took for granted that's how it worked. And it was complete not failures at the beginning. The civilian world was so different than in the special operations community.
So I'm sitting there watching the Bills last night. They're beating up the Titans, enjoying it. And I'm saying to myself, wow, they've built such an amazing team. They're so lucky because all the people coming out of the draft, you know, really want to be there. They're all high performers. But then I sat back and I said to myself, well, that's a bunch of bullshit. Because there's, you know, 25 other teams or how many ever teams there are now that also have that same at bat and are not doing it at that level right now. So it's really not that much of an advantage. So Jake, stop being a little bitch and realize that you just got to get better to build up better people around you, because right now it's a big challenge out there to get talent, retain talent. It's a super competitive job market. And that's one of the areas that our group, you know, is struggling to find, you know, pay is adjusting, you know, people are poaching and it's just a very competitive labor market out there right now. So I've been struggling with that. And I think that, you know, ultimately you just got to own your scenario and find a way to get better. What are your thoughts on that?
So most organizations concentrate on let's call it the value production of their individual team members, right? So measurable performance. And when you look at it from the perspective of the SEALs, you can say, or like you're saying with the Bills, well, they have super high performing people. So people that represent a lot of value, therefore they have a good team. But there's a missing component that we don't pay attention to. On one side of the equation, you have that value, like how valuable, how high functioning are the individuals that you have. On the other side of the equation, you have the connection between those individuals. I look at it like building a house. You can have a house with little bricks or big bricks, right? The higher functioning an individual is, the bigger the brick they represent for the organization. If you build a wall with really big bricks, it can stand some force, but as soon as you put some force in the middle of it, it falls over. It's the mortar between the bricks that make a wall really strong. I'd rather have medium-sized bricks with a whole bunch of mortar, meaning, you know, relatively functional people with a ton of connection, as opposed to really high-functioning people with no connection. And when you pay attention to both of those, especially at the connection side of it, not only can you get higher performance, but it's much less likely that someone's going to get poached, right? So if you have someone that feels deeply connected to their team, when someone tries to come and get them, they can offer them more money, which would be on the value side of the equation, but it's the connection side that humans actually really experience success once they have that piece figured out. So that'd be my
thought. Don't leave us hanging there. Come on, you gotta give us the juice on the connection now. How do you build that connection?
So I think it's a formula. You know, from the book that Gino's talking about that we wrote, everything that I do is systematic, right? Formulaic. So I have a formula for connection. I believe that connection is authenticity, vulnerability, and trust. So it all goes back to our caveman roots. Ultimately, we're just cave people with fancy clothes and nice tools. And for a cave person, the most valuable thing in their world was the tribe. And on that tribe, one, you have to be valuable. That's that performance side. But you also need to be deeply connected to that tribe. If we're going out on a hunting party and I'm not authentic, right? So I tell you I'm the best spearman there is, but I don't know which end's the pointy end. I'm putting you at risk. If, say, on the last hunt I hurt my knee and I don't share that I've got that limitation, I'm not being vulnerable, I put you at risk. If you can't trust me to be behind you when the lion roars, I put you at risk. So authenticity, vulnerability, and trust lead to a human feeling safe being around another human, which speaks to our most core fundamental needs. So building connection is formulaic from my experience.
Jake, did you hear the second one? It's vulnerability. You got to be a little more vulnerable with me, bro. You got to show your emotions a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sorry. I'm thinking profit right now. I want his next book to be called The Caveman Connection, but that's where my head goes. Anyways, sorry.
I want to share the story of Larry and preface it before I ask him a question. Think of a person who's his whole entire life, he's wanted to be a Navy SEAL. He's gone through school. He's been bullied. That's his dream. His dream has been doing that. Goes to the Naval Academy, gets in a really difficult school to get in at the time, graduates, goes to the SEALs, does it for 10 years. And then all of a sudden, he's sitting in that hospital bed, sitting there writhing in pain, because he probably should have taken care of himself a lot sooner. If he was trustworthy with himself, he should have said, I should have gone there a lot sooner, but he waited. Larry, what were your thoughts when the doctor came in and said, sorry, bro, your time is up?
It was one of the most devastating things just based on the fact of losing purpose. Unless you have a deeply derived, internally held purpose, you can't feel fulfillment. And even though I was operating in some of the world's worst environments in impossible missions with high risk, no real reward for any of that, I've never felt more successful in my life because I was in tightly coordinated action with my team, fulfilling my deeply held purpose. And as soon as that surgeon said that my SEAL career is over, my purpose, with no purpose, no matter what you do, you can't feel fulfillment. And so it really was a big feeling of being lost. And knowing that unless I figured something out, there really was no big, that not only having to live with the pain, having to live with the loss of my career, having no purpose would really take away the whole meaning of life.
So now that you feel sorry for yourself, you're pissed off, you probably want to strangle the doctor, the whole nine yards. What was the next thought process? Because you're a high performer. You're not sitting there saying to yourself, I feel sorry for myself. What was the next thought process? How did you get over that feeling of lacking purpose? And what was that next direction, the next step you took?
It really was to try and find the next mission. Like at that point in time, I was very mission focused, right? So we got missions, we accomplished those missions. Getting my purpose taken away, having no mission was really the hard part. And it was in finding a new mission. Like, so what am I going to go tackle next? And it was my business partner that at the time, my fiance, that saw me as more than just a weapon. Like at that point, my whole life was destruction and violence. And I never saw myself as anything but a weapon. And the thought that I could actually create something was just so foreign. It was actually her that gave me that insight that the real value that I brought was not as a weapon. It was as someone that was able to create, manage, and lead high functioning teams. And so that started our next journey.
So your calling card was you were the weapon of mass destruction, Larry Yatch, 98 to 2008. That's going to be my follow up, Jake. I like that. I like that little.
It's actually, for me, I'd say it was much more surgical destruction. Like that's, I think, the big difference.
Okay, between he enjoyed it.
Like we go in and it is very highly focused destruction.
Hey, Larry, I want to jump in here for a second because I'm going to be vulnerable for Gino because he's giving me shit right now.
Yeah, we'll get some connection going.
We'll get some connection. So my last high school football game, I cried my eyes out and I'm not a crier. And you just made me realize something about myself. At that point in my life, it gave me a ton of purpose and fulfillment, probably much like the SEALs did for you. And one thing that I find very interesting, and it's a self-aware component of my life right now, is that when I hear people talking about retirement and how they just want to get there, I scratch my head and I've not been able to articulate it up until this point. But I personally don't ever want to retire. I really enjoy the business that we're in. I see myself doing it until they put me in the dirt. And so I think the difference is that I've probably found something that continues to give me purpose as an entrepreneur. And that's why I get confused when I hear people say, I can't wait. I just want to retire when I get out. They're probably not getting that same type of fulfillment. What say you? What are your thoughts on this?
I would say it's twofold. One is the purpose, but I'd say a deeper driving need for a human is to be in coordinated action towards a future that they want to create with other human beings.
Like the G-Daddy.
Why G-Daddy for that one?
No, because that's my partner, the G-Daddy right there. That's my purpose-driven human right there that I'm rocking with. So,
well, and that was the thing that I called it the dichotomy of experience. So think of it from the perspective as a SEAL, right? It was constant risk. We lived in the world's worst environments. Our competition tried to kill us on a daily basis. We didn't get a reward, right? It wasn't like we got paid a lot or there's a lot of recognition. It was just kind of misery piled upon misery. And when I looked at that, why did that part of my life feel the most successful? When I looked in my business career and there were times where I had, money and houses and cars, boats, all of this stuff, right? Easy life, comfortable life, yet I was miserable. And what I realized is it wasn't the environment. It was the fact that being in coordinated action towards a desired end state with the team that produces a feeling of success, right? That feeling of success came from us being in a risky environment, having very clear missions to accomplish and having to coordinate action at the highest level. When I was in the business, even when I had all of this, what others would look at as success with a dysfunctional team, it was that dysfunction on the team that drove the dissatisfaction. And so, what I think I'm hearing you say is one, having a purpose, but two, being able to coordinate action, right, with other humans, being on a mission, right, together where you're trying to achieve something. That's really where that success comes from.
Leadership from the SEALs. What did you learn from leadership from the SEALs? I was reading that you're more of like a bottom up as far as people think of leaders as these amazing visionaries and everyone's got to lead. I think that's maybe a misnomer. And I also want to throw in the definition you have of leadership. It's about behavior change. It's creating an environment that evokes followers to take effective action toward a desired end state. It's about change of behavior. Larry, what did you learn from the SEALs and brought that into leadership into your business?
The biggest thing is that the relationship between leadership and management is 180 degrees different. So it's I would consider it backwards in the civilian world. So in the business world, we believe that you have the visionary leader at the top and you have a series of managers that are required to put that visionary leader's vision into action. Mm-hmm. So that's the common understanding on this side.
Yep.
On the other side, on the SEAL side, we flip that, where we believe that a manager is anyone with positional authority. So if you have a title, you're a manager. And as a manager, my job, so as the platoon commander of my platoon, being the senior most person in my platoon, My job is to manage that platoon and create an environment where everyone underneath me leads. So if I ever have to lead, if I have to ever directly have to evoke action in someone, I'm failing as a manager. So my job as a manager is to create a space for leadership and to follow my leaders. In that sense, you're unrestricted in your ability to grow. On the business side, if I'm the visionary leader and managers have to work underneath me to put my vision into action, I'm very much restricted as to how fast or how large that can grow. So it's changing the distinction of leader and manager, that if you have a title, if you ever have to directly evoke action in someone, you're failing. Your job as a manager, as someone with a title, is to create a space of leadership underneath you all the way down to the very bottom.
I love that. In the book, you have the six pillars. You mind if I mention them? Let everyone write them down real quick and we'll go through them. The first one is success, everybody. Write that down. The second one is team. The third one is behavior. The fourth one is self-regulation. The fifth is leadership. And the sixth is planning. And as I'm saying those, I'm holding the book up. Excellent book. I want you all to run out, buy it on Amazon when you're done with the recording. But Darry, can we dive through those real quick for everybody? The first one being success.
Totally. Most leadership books start with leadership. And as you can tell, not only did I turn leadership and management upside down, it's the same thing with this, right? We can't even start to talk about leadership until individual performance works. So there are many, many leaders out there, many people that are trying to evoke effective action in others, yet their individual performance sucks. And that's not going to produce good leadership. So the first four provide a foundation of performance that enables us to then turn outwards and lead.
So is that why our current political system actually sucks? Because they're all leaders, but they all suck at what they do, and they have no skill sets, and they can't take care of themselves, and they're out there trying to lead a country or trying to lead a desired end state. They don't even know what the hell they're doing.
I'm not much into politics, but in general, right?
He said, I don't want to get canceled. Moving on.
Those that have done work, like you said, right? Those that have coordinated action with a large group of people very effectively, they know what their individual performance has to be good, right? There's no one that is at a very high level that has coordinated action with hundreds and thousands of people whose individual performance sucks.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's why governors make good leaders, right? Because they govern the state, they run a state. That's why senators don't make good leaders, because they're just out there politicking. But yeah, when you have actual people running and performance and managing KPIs and managing teams, those are the ones that should be leading. Don't you agree with that?
I would agree, definitely.
Okay, sorry about that. So success.
Where are you going with this, Gino?
I just, as he's saying things, well, the other one was this whole COVID-19 shutdown, not to get political, but as we shut a whole country down for a year or two, there's no more vulnerability. There's no trust. There's no connectivity amongst humans. Of course, things are going to fall apart and things aren't going to work. And now that we're getting out of it, hopefully people have that connectivity and that trust going forward. But you can see what that would have done to leadership and to entities and to organizations, and trying to work remotely and only remote and not getting in and getting that connectivity probably hurts an organization long term. Short term, it can work, but long term, what are your thoughts on that as far as trying to work remote and trying to build connectivity and culture that way, Larry?
So two things. One, the effects of shutting down the country. So I don't follow politics in any way, shape, or form. I don't watch the news in any way, shape, or form. I don't look at any social media, based on the fact that my focus and my attention is my most valuable asset. And I'm not going to let someone steal that from me. And so I don't ever make political commentary, because I don't follow any of it. But just from a perspective of fundamental human performance, right? We are cave people, as I said, and cave people, the most important thing in their life is tribe. As soon as you put someone in an environment where their perception of control is taken away, you start to traumatize them. Right? That is every major trauma, from going to war, to sexual assault, to being beaten up. All those traumas are just when someone takes away your control. So by taking and isolating people, you're taking away their sense of control, which produces a space of trauma. And what allows someone to feel safe is connection with others. So to me, there's going to be some long-term effects of isolating people outside and taking away their sense of control. So just from the human side of it, yeah, we're going to have to deal with some issues as these come to the surface.
I love that. So I'm sorry, you had success going on in team, those pillars.
Right. So going back to the pillars, just looking at performance on a fundamental basis, we first have to know where we're going. That's where we go with success. And again, I think we look at this in a backwards environment. We generally look at success as setting a goal or objective and achieving it. One of the things that we know as especially as an American is that anything worthwhile takes a lot of pain, suffering, and effort. And I question if that's true, right? What is it? What would be possible if it was easy, right? What if it didn't take suffering to have success? And I'll make a case that success is not setting a goal or achievement and or goal or objective and achievement. It's having an optimized daily experience that's sustainable over time. And in that case, success is a feeling, not something to achieve. Any of us that have achieved success or what others would look at as success know that as soon as we achieve a goal or objective, we just set the next one. So by that first definition of success, will you ensure that you never experience it? So that's the first set, is changing that paradigm around focusing on our daily experience and making that sustainable over time. The next piece on that is what enables a human to feel successful, as we already talked about, is the tribe, is the team. So your level of success is 100% dependent on your ability to coordinate action with others. Anyone in this world that has achieved a lot of success coordinates action well. Anyone that is suffering is in discord with those around them. So the next thing you have to identify is what teams do I need to be on and how do I function on those teams?
Do you mind if I jump in real quick and just share our story with Jake and Gino, how we started the education company? With these first two, I've had the paradigm shift as well. My whole focus was doing deals, closing deals, having the students close the deals. And like you said, you close a deal, there's the next one right around the corner. And I've wanted to shift to the students to say, hey, you joined 3 months ago. 3 months ago, you didn't even know what a cap rate was. You didn't know fractional banking at all. You didn't even know about growth mindset and fixed mindset. Look what you've learned in these 3 months. It's amazing what you've learned. And that daily rhythm, that daily feeling, like you said, of success is so important. And the community aspect, the tribe aspect of that's where I want to bring the whole Jake and Gino community. During COVID, we had events. July of 2020, we had an event in Knoxville with 100 students. It was imperative for me to get on site and to see people during that shutdown time. I thrived during COVID because of the Jake and Gino community. And my selfish is to get out there and to get people together. So success, which you said on these first two, everybody, let's go back and listen to what Larry said, because it is imperative that you look at success that way. Dr. Ben Hardy talks about it, the gap and the gain. You're living in the gap when you're looking for the next deal. You're living in the gain when you're saying, hey, I'm enjoying where I am right now. I've come so far. The light is out there at the end of the tunnel, but look what I've done all the way behind me to get to where I am right now. And if you can start doing that and start living your life like that, you're going to feel more successful. And ironically enough, you're going to achieve more a lot quicker.
Yeah, and I would argue that in this space that you guys are in with multifamily real estate, is there any way that you can be successful in that space alone?
It's tough.
Very difficult. I mean, Jake and I did it early
on. Team sport, baby.
Yeah.
Well, and even that, like, you might be able to have your part, but you need to coordinate act with a bunch of people.
Lots of people.
And so that's where, and those that do that the best, right? They create those teams of specialists that do everything from the underwriting to the deal flow to the funding side of it. If you're able to coordinate action really well, you can create amazing success in the multifamily space. And
that's
so
only two thirds of it, right? You got buying, you got financing, then the whole management piece, which may be bigger than the third, right? It's crazy.
So Jake, what I hear Larry saying is everyone's got to go out and join Jake and Gino because it's imperative, because you can't do it by yourself. So just
count it.
Jake and, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and just start working with the team. But seriously.
Well, I didn't say that directly, but I think it goes deeper than that, right? Because what you guys are offering, I'm making this assumption. What you're offering is not only the knowledge of how to create that team, that coordinated action to do it, but a community of support in doing it, which is what's going to create that feeling of success. Even if you do a deal by yourself, you're out there struggling, But if you're able to put those deals together and have the support of the community, have the ability to pull in, say, an underwriter when you need it, all of that is what's going to produce the feeling of success, and the accomplishments of money and deal will follow.
There's no doubt it's a team sport, guys. I think it's.
The other component, though, Larry, is the accountability piece. You know, Jake and I always joke around that I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Well, Ima gets burned out real quick, and she is really lonely. But with that community where you can start partnering with other people, you can start raising money with other people. You can start, you know, like you said, how does my underwriting look? Do you know the person that can, you know, tell me who's a great accountant? All those resources that you're able to do. And I love the fact that that community is so important, so imperative. I mean, the students have done over 50,000 units. They've closed over $4 billion in deals. And that is one of the success measurements. But I'm always seeing the next deal, the next student closing their deals. But having that accountability piece is so important in a team, because you don't want to let your team down or your tribe down. Because as Larry said a couple of times, we still have that caveman mentality, because we want to have trust within that community and we want to help others. And by helping others, we have impact. We feel like we're creating impact. And that's another feeling of being successful.
Which leads to the next piece. So if we've identified that success is a feeling of an optimized daily experience sustainable over time, which is produced by being on a high functioning team, the next piece that goes into that is, how do I get on a high functioning team, and how do I stay on it? How do I perform on it? And that comes down to behavior. So your individual behavior and ability to change that behavior drives what team you get to be on, which, you know, we didn't set this up to be a pitch for your group, but what you do in the
group, we'll take it.
We're doing it. So what you do in the group is education, right? Education gives people the opportunity to modify their behavior to produce a higher functioning team, right? So it does line up directly into what is needed to be successful. And the next piece, which you just talked about accountability, the fourth chunk, the foundation of individual performance, is self-regulation. So your behavior is dependent on your ability to use your intention to modify mentally, physically, and emotionally. So when I can regulate mentally, physically, and emotionally, I can change my behavior, which enables me to either perform better on my team or to get on a higher performing team, which enables me to coordinate action at a high level and have success. Accountability is one of the tools that we can use to increase our self-regulation, which enables us to modify behavior.
So one thing, that behavior piece, we always say education times action equals results. Getting educated is great, but if you're not self-regulating and taking action, it's all for naught. So a couple of those two together, as Larry is talking about, as you're thinking about this, great, I'm going on YouTube, watching some videos, I'm doing a property tour here, but I'm not really putting in any letters of intent. I'm not taking any action. I'm not going out and raising capital. I'm not looking at deals. You need to couple both.
Are you actually underwriting the deals, or are you just, you know, kind of kicking tires here? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Number five is leadership, Larry.
So
regulation.
Like, if we look at it as an individual, say I'm very clear on the environment that I want to have on a daily basis and make that sustainable. I'm on the right team. I have effective behavior that enables me to perform well on that team. And anytime that I have a limitation, I have the self-regulation necessary to modify that behavior. Is it possible for you not to perform at a high level if you're doing those four things? It becomes impossible, right? Like, that is the foundation of being a high-functioning individual. Leadership is merely taking those four things, and instead of inwardly producing them, it's about outwardly bringing that and elevating those around you, their ability in those four spaces. So leadership at the core is just influencing behavior change. Anytime that I influence behavior change in someone, I'm leading them. How do we lead effectively? We identify where someone has a gap in success and team and behavior or self-regulation, and we work with them to increase their capability in any one of those four. In doing that, we increase their overall capacity capability, which allows us to experience more success as well. So leadership is merely turning the things that you've been doing yourself outward to better the lives of those around you.
And the last one is Jake's favorite, planning.
So as soon as you're doing those four things, you're going to start needing support. That's where leadership comes in. Now you have a team. as soon as you have a team doing those four things, you're going to have momentum, right? You're moving, you're starting to move fast. That's where planning comes in. And I used to teach this the other way around, because as a SEAL, I already had high functioning people that knew how to coordinate action, right? I had those first five things. So planning became the most important thing. That's where we started. When I got in the civilian world, I found that most people don't perform individually at a high level. And if they do, they don't know how to coordinate action. They don't know how to follow and lead. And therefore, teaching someone how to plan that can't produce effective action is a fool's errand. So by getting to the place where we now have momentum, planning becomes a critical space to make sure that we're moving in the right direction.
Hold on. Say that piece again about working with someone as a fool's action, that they don't have the capacity. That's how I heard it. Say that again, because you went quick.
So imagine you have someone that can't perform well as an individual and doesn't coordinate action well. So let's get 10 of those people.
What do you do with that person?
Well, first, let's put 10.
You don't hire them.
Well, do you have the luxury of only hiring SEALs?
Yeah, like, no. 100% no. Still have not hired a SEAL yet. Looking for my first.
So my whole point, we talked about, like, am I only going to hire big ass bricks?
Yeah.
And the odds are, no, I can't. I can't afford it, right? So I'd rather hire small to medium bricks, be the one that develops them into big bricks through deep connection and strong fundamentals of performance, right? Then they're mine. They're never going anywhere. So on that side of it, if I have someone that can't perform individually and doesn't know how to coordinate action, say I get 10 of those people in a room and I teach them how to put a plan together, it's a waste of time. They'll put a plan together, but because they can't coordinate action and they can't hold their commitments as an individual, they're not going to go anywhere. So that's where planning is useless with low functioning people that can't coordinate action.
So again, what do we do with these people?
We got to lead them. We got to develop.
Jeez, brain.
Yeah. So, It really comes down to, like, the first thing that I identified as the biggest gap between the SEAL world and the civilian world is their relationship with responsibility. As a SEAL, as a commander in SEALs, if I asked one of my guys to do something and they committed to doing it, 100 out of 100 times they did it. I mean, I can think of like 5 times in my entire career where someone didn't hold their commitment. Now, many times they came back to me and said, hey, sir, I can't do this. This is why. This is what I need to be able to do it. What do you want me to do? So there are times where they couldn't meet their commitment, but they
came. God, that sounds refreshing.
That's where I was looking.
Imagine if we communicated like that. Hey, Gino, sir, I wasn't able to do this. Here's why. You can just give me a little guidance and
help me out.
Yeah. Fucking A.
So this is a big piece. Like, in the SEALs, one of my favorite words from the guys that I led was no. Like, how often do the people that you manage say no to you? Like, hey, can you do this for me? No. It's probably relatively rare, right? For me, they'd say no all the time. Like, no, I can't do that. And it's another formula. No, why, how. So I want my guys to say no. I want them to tell me why they're saying no. And I want them to tell me how they can make it a yes. So that's all.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Tell me no, because if you can tell me no, then your yes means something. If you can't tell me no, then your yes means shit. Yeah, and
I'm sorry. Before I cut you off, you're solutions-based thinking. That's the problem with this country right now. No one wants to create a solution. They come through the problem and then, no, I can't do it. Okay,
but let's work. Stops. That's the problem. Exactly. There's no, and then that's
yes.
It.
So say that again, please, because that was like, I mean,
simple,
that's
formula
moment right there. Yes.
No, why, how? No, I can't do it. This is why I can't do it. This is how I can make it a yes.
So
virtual hug, works? Dude. That just feels good. Virtual hug, man. Here we coming for the real
but
thing.
You know why this works, Jake? Because he's showing the vulnerability, bro. You got to be a little vulnerable sometimes to say, no, I can't
whatever.
Do it.
Whatever. It's solutions oriented, Gino.
No,
it's beautiful.
Gino's right.
It's beautiful
Gino
music.
Gino is dead right. Right. Like, I say no all the time. Like, my people come to me, hey, I want to raise. No. This is why I'm saying no. This is how I can make a yes. Right. It's both directions. I'm limited. I'm as limited as they are. Mm-hmm. Right. And I want to build an environment where they're comfortable being limited based on the, again, if they can't say no, they're yes.
You're empowering the shit out of people by doing that.
Oh, hell yeah. They have no choice but to become better humans around.
Well, they're thinking, you're making them think. All of a sudden you're empowering them to come up with a solution, which is great because most people don't do that. They want to be told what to do. But if you actually teach your people to come up with solutions, it makes your job a lot easier. And you may not have thought about that solution yourself. So I was like, okay, what can we do? So that is awesome.
There's a cost to it. There's a cost to creating that environment is
it's
takes
tiring.
More time. You
it's
have to slow
tiring.
Down.
I'm sorry, Larry. Let me finish before you finish. Yeah, I'm a father of six children. If I do that with every one of my kids every single day, all the time, I will get burned out. We homeschool the kids, so my wife sometimes I come home, I could see she's like been forget. She's a weapon of service of destruction herself, and she's tired at the end of the day. So if you do that to every single kid all the time,
over time it'll sink in though.
But
it's consistency over time, like anything.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
That's where I look at it like. Do you want to pay now or later, buddy? Like I either pay now, there's this big old hill, and then it's easy. Or do you want the hard stuff now or the hard stuff later? I don't do it now and it's gonna get really hard later. So I'm putting in early. And I have to remind myself, I have two young boys, 8 and 6. And it's every question I approach as if it's the last time I'm gonna be able to answer a question for them. Right. Because it gets easier and easier and easier. It just put.
How do you approach that question? So if they say, like, you know, why is the grass green?
Why do you think the grass is green?
Oh, like,
here's the simplest action. Right. I love this one. Like everyone's been in this. When are we going to get there? Right. In the car. Then as soon as you answer like 20 minutes, what do you get 5 minutes later? When are we going to get there? When are we going to get there? So. The way I do it every time, when are we going to get there? I'll tell them it's going to be 35 minutes. The next time they ask me, when are we going to get there? How long do you think it's going to take for us to get there? They can now start figuring it out. And they'll sit there on the pause and be like, 14 minutes. Yeah, you're close. It was 15. Next time, 5 minutes later, when are we going to get there? Well, you say it was 15 minutes before. How long do you think it's going to be? Now that takes more effort than just telling them the time. But they're learning every time.
Hey, you got nothing else to do. You're in the car anyways.
Yeah. Well, so it's Larry, like the easy hard or the hard easy. I'll take the hard easy any day.
What you're doing, though, is ultimately you're creating your kids to think. I mean, the kids go to school. They're not taught to think. They're taught to regurgitate. So if you can teach your team and your children to think, they can actually ask great questions. And the greater the question you're is, the greater your life is going to become because you're going to get a great question, an even better answer, and then another better question. So I
the reason Larry's successful is because he didn't go to college. Maybe he did later on in life, but I'm just saying he got right out in the seals there. So Larry, I'm like so anti-college right now in my life. It's ridiculous.
I am too. I mean, I went to prison instead of college. I went to Naval Academy, yeah. Which is more prison than college, but.
Hey, but you enjoyed it, man. There's nothing wrong with that.
It was I would have much rather gone into the SEALs first, gone back to college after, because I was just wasting my time in college waiting to go to the SEALs. And I believe that our school system is one of the biggest limitations for an individual to produce success in today's world, based on the fact that it was built during the Industrial Revolution. In that space, we needed factory workers, and factory workers have to know that they're going to be told what to do. If they do it well, they'll get little rewards and eventually get a big reward at the end of the day. That's no longer the world that we're in. You know, the fact that we...
Dude, at least you're not strapping them with $150,000 of debt right out the gates. Like that's the craziest thing ever. College, these people go... stack 150K debt, can't get a car loan, can't get a house loan, but we can give you a college loan that you'll never be able to get rid of only by paying. It doesn't matter if you go bankrupt or not. Okay. That's college.
This is the only loan
we can give you, and you're not going to learn shit, but we're going to bury your ass financially right out the gates.
Jake, how do you think?
Congratulations, America. Woo!
I think the bigger issue is you're asking an 18-year-old to make a decision on what they want to do for the rest of their life and invest $150,000 worth of debt. Like that was the bigger issue.
They don't even know what they're doing though. If you want to talk about actual like fucking loan sharks, dude, look at these guys, right? That's predatory lending. I'm sorry. Like you want to talk about real predatory lending. Look at the college. Like, look at the colleges, what those guys are doing. So,
Larry, let me ask you one last question before you go to the short answer questions. How do you hire when you're looking for people? What is your metrics? Do you use top grading, or what do you use when you start, when you're hiring?
We use predictive index, the PEI stuff. We've been using that. We've got, I'd say one of the big benefits of that too, is we have, I don't know what you call him, but he's like an agent for him that helps us read the predictive index stuff and really gives us a deep dive on it. And that's been very useful. For us, we're an education company and a consulting company as well. So one of the things that I do is that I won't hire anyone that hasn't already invested in their education through us. So every one of our hires has paid us to teach them, because that to me allows me a couple things. One, it allows me to know that they're of a learning nature, right? They're willing to invest in learning. Two, I get to watch them. How do they perform? Right? Do they perform well? Do they not? Do they hold their commitments, or do they not hold their commitments?
It's a hell of a recruitment.
Those are kind
tool.
Of the tricks that we do. Like they actually pay us to hire them.
That's awesome.
Wonderful. All right, guys, let's take a quick timeout to hear from our sponsor.
Get involved in multifamily, this is where you need to be.
The team you've built is incredible.
There is no egos here. Everyone is always looking to help the other person.
All right, we are back. We're going back around. We're going to dissect you a little bit. Yeah, we're gonna pick apart your brain, your body, your feet. We're going to look at it all and see what works here. But we're going to start off with what the optimized daily routine looks like, because I was fascinated by that and how that leads to your fulfillment. And just want to hear about what yours looks like and what works well for you.
So optimized daily experience and a daily routine to me are two different things. When I speak about success with an optimized daily experience, it's what are the emotional states that I want to feel on a regular basis? What emotional states do I want to avoid on a regular basis? And how do I make that sustainable over time? When it comes to that versus a daily routine, I don't have much of a daily routine based on the fact that I travel a lot for work. So I don't, I'll be in two different cities next week. And that happens quite often. A big thing for me is sleep, getting enough sleep, especially being a SEAL. I didn't have the opportunity to sleep much. So being able to get enough sleep is a big one. The other thing is I love doing things outside in which I can probably die. So like anything that you can die doing, I'm a big fan of. So at least a couple times a week, I want to get out and do something exciting outdoors, anything from mountain biking to paragliding, racing cars, whatever I can do to get my little dose of excitement outside. So those are kind of some of the core things that I have in my day every day my week.
So how are you calibrating the experience then? Is there like an evaluation weekly? This is where we're at. This is what we got to tweak. What does that look like?
So I'm looking at it from on a daily basis and then on a weekly basis. So on a daily basis, did I spend most of the day in the emotional states that I wanted to versus the emotional states I want to avoid or not? That's literally a check mark. And there is I forget the name of it, but there's a guy that wrote this article about how many days you have in your life. There's like on average 15,000 or something like that. And he made a chart where it's just a bunch of little boxes, and it shows you like that's as many boxes as you have to fill for the average human. So I got that chart and I just literally put an X or a check mark. Like did I have, was today.
Do you still do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was today mostly in the states that I want or mostly in the states I don't want? And yeah, I get to see trends over time. And then I can always look back and see, and I started to change my habit where I was traveling a lot more. And I found that I was having more X's than check marks on the days that I was traveling. So I group travel and limited it. And then just looking back on that weekly, monthly helps to see where the trends are.
So I think really simply put, you got your seven checks for the week. You go through, assign it, you know, that evening before you go to bed, and maybe make a small note. Today sucked because I traveled too much. And then at the end of the week, you can give a self-eval and say, okay, I got to stop traveling because I'm not enjoying this and it's not putting me into a state that I enjoy.
Quite simple. And you know, very simple, like yes, no, one thing. What's the primary driver of yes or no? If you just do that, look at it on a regular basis, it's quite easy to figure out the trends.
Then you can hone in and just say, Gino's pissing me off every day. I got to get that guy out of my life. No, I'm just kidding. I'd never say that. He's a man. So any books that you've read in the last year or so that have added value to your life that you want to share with folks?
I would say one of the top ones. I read this one quite a while ago, but it, you know, it's one of the ones I'd suggest that most people never heard of, is a book called Iron War. So it's about two of the world's best Ironman length triathletes and their like decade long battle. The reason I found it very useful is one, it's an interesting story, but it's one of the best books around self-regulation I've ever read. So really going into some of the science behind self-regulation. And if we look at my formula for individual performance, self-regulation is the base. So by being able to self-regulate, you can control your behavior. Behavior creates opportunities for team. Team creates success. So that to me becomes one of the foundational principles and one of the best books on it.
Talk about how self-regulation is not routine and where that is different.
So self-regulation, all self-regulation is controlled by two parts of the brain. And that's interesting because mental self-regulation, physical self-regulation, emotional self-regulation, very different expressions of self-regulation, but they're ultimately controlled by two parts. That gives us some insights into, I'm either building self-regulation or I'm building quit. And we all know people quit all the time. Like they have a habit, a skill in quitting. And then you have other people that have a habit or a skill in persevering and being able to self-regulate, modify their behavior. So routine is the opposite of self-regulation, right? If I'm going into routine that I don't have to put any thought to, then I'm not leveraging any self-regulation, which can be really good because our self-regulation stores are limited, meaning I only have X amount of self-regulation power available to me. And if I have to use it up on little things, then I'm wasting it for when I need it. So I'm a huge proponent of routine. I'm one of those people like Steve Jobs. If I could, I just wear the same clothes all the time. Like I would, anything that I can take out of my life that I don't have to think about because it's unimportant is freedom to me. And Jocko Willink, one of the other, you know, famous SEALs, says a discipline is freedom. And I totally believe that, right? The more disciplined I am, the more structured I am, the more freedom I have to leverage my intellect, my skill, my self-regulation in new areas to expand.
It's not anti-routine. It's just when you're applying the self-regulation, it actually requires thought and bandwidth versus setting up a structure for you to live in. I'm literally, my mind's expanding as we're having this conversation. So I'm not like blowing smoke, but because I literally am a creature of habit and I really enjoy routine, but also the evaluation needs to come with that free bandwidth that you're creating by not having to think throughout the day on you know, minuscule tasks. So clear.
Exactly. Appreciate that. Now, when I have to use self-regulation to, let's say, initiate my routine, that, you know, that to me is both something I have to pay attention to that I'm not wasting that self-regulation, as well as is a donation to the self-regulation bank, right? Anytime I can stretch my self-regulation, I'll build more power for later. So I look at it as both. But ultimately, if I want to like eat healthier, I don't want to have to make it something that I have to use self-regulation to do. Like I'm relatively fit, especially for someone. I've had 14 surgeries. Like I should be walking around with a cane and I'm 46 and fitter than most 46-year-olds I know. The reason being is I don't like going to the gym. Like if I had to go to the gym, I would have to use self-regulation to do that. Many times I choose not to. I make sure there's things in my life like mountain biking that I love to do that enable me to be fit. Like I don't have to work myself up to go work out. I get to go work out because I get to go do something I enjoy.
You don't got to do it. You get to do it.
Exactly.
Mountain bike. I got to get back on the mountain bike. Man, I'm just going to say this. I've truly enjoyed this. We've had some really, big name people on, but I must say you're by far one of the smartest individuals I've ever spoken to on this show. And I've really appreciated all this. It's just been fascinating. What's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
The easiest, at least for the time being, is through the book website. So the book is How Leadership Actually Works. The website's the same thing, howleadershipactuallyworks.com. From there, not only will there be links to get the book, but there's also, I believe, direct links that if you have interest to talk to me or my team about what we do for individuals or companies, you can contact us through that. The other one,
what was the website again? What was the website?
HowLeadershipActuallyWorks.com.
Perfect.
The other one is I've social media isn't my thing, but my girlfriend created a Instagram page for me that is Larry Does Cool Shit.
Gino, what you got, man? You got something in the tank here or what? You gonna bring it home for us?
I'd like to wrap this up. Starting out with Larry as a young boy going to school, being bullied, and then having the dream of joining the Navy SEALs. And his dream came to fruition. He probably should have skipped college, as he said. Went to college for 4 years, became a Navy SEAL from 98 to 2008. He was a lieutenant. And the cool thing about it was he learned all this leadership stuff that he's talking about today. And it's an amazing book. I'm going to hold it up for everybody else again, How Leadership Actually Works. Like, this is the real deal. This is not theory. This is not crap. This is stuff that actually works. The definition of leadership is creating an environment that evokes followers to take effective action toward a desired state. Talking about value and connection, authenticity, vulnerability, Jake, trust. He's a weapon of surgical destruction, Larry Yatch. And I want to thank you for being on the show today.
Good job, Gino. That was awesome. A weapon of surgical destruction. I've yet to be called that. So I love that one.
That's the Instagram post. That's the Insta post right there.
Put it in the bio and the Instagram. Let's get some cool, 50 caliber guns going on that thing. We'll get that rocking. So, hey, man, again, Larry, just really appreciated it today. Just a wealth of knowledge and intelligence. So, gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time. Thanks, everyone.